On this episode, we discuss Victor Frankenstein.
Just the guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, we just were like, what's up with him?
Hey.
I haven't seen him since college.
I see him on Facebook, and he's like, still working on this corpse, and I like it. You know, I don't really like it, but I give him a like because I feel bad for him.
Yeah, it's a pity like.
And he always tags the corpse, and he makes a Facebook page for the corpse, and you're like, dude, if you spent less time on your social media marketing campaign and more time on your studies and your research, maybe you'd have brought that corpse back to life by now. But instead, he's got fucking Instagram feeds for every project, and it's like, come on, stop putting the cart before the corpse, am I right?
Yeah, but he's verified on Instagram now, so he's got that going for him.
True.
I mean, what do you have to show for it on Instagram?
I don't even have an Instagram account.
Movies. The Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
And I'm Stuart Wellington, 6'1", hard-bodied.
And I'm Elliot Kalin, 5'4", soft like silly buddy.
Wow, I didn't know we were doing this, guys. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, it's called Yes Anding.
Yeah, you want to do your bit
now? Start over. You do yours. Yeah,
I'm Dan McCoy, mediocre body.
All right.
Okay, cool. You're part of the cool guy club.
Yeah, default human.
Yeah.
Super awesome rad. What are we doing? What is this and what do we do on it?
Mm-hmm. This is a podcast, number one. Okay. So First principles.
It's not a hot dog.
No.
And it's not a unicorn.
Not inserted a hot dog into your ear. I mean, even though
please don't,
it's very tempting.
No.
Because your hot dog is about ear insertion sized, and your ear is a hole that you can put things in.
I mean, your ear does have a hole you can put things in, and that thing is called sound.
How is a hot dog ear insertion sized?
Because Dan
has freakish
ears. A, I want to
know what
ears
you have, and B, what kind of hot dogs you've been looking at.
They could be those, like, little
mini
Franks.
I'm looking at your ears right now, and I could put a hot dog in there.
No way. Like,
the tip of a hot dog.
With work.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, with work. I mean, maybe if you slather in mustard and mayonnaise.
Like, it's going to take effort. It's not like you just accidentally, like, just slip it in.
No, I could slip it in anywhere. I can.
You know what? Forget I ever mentioned hot dogs.
Okay, so what do we do on this podcast?
This is a podcast where we watch a bad movie.
So it's not a hamburger.
No, it's not a hamburger. It's not Hot Dog the movie. It's not Hamburger the movie.
Okay.
It's a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it.
Is Hamburger the movie about downhill skating or downhill skiing?
It's actually a Holocaust picture.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it takes place in Hamburg.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
Especially Hamburger.
I was going to ask how it connected, but then you got there first.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they call me the Get There Firster. Elliot, the Get There Firster.
Sounds like a really well-defined character.
Fastest get there in the West.
Mm-hmm. Nobody gets there firster. That's my slogan.
Yeah, that's how you got rid of the Pony Express with your slogan, nobody gets there firster.
Yeah, because I'm an immortal who's walked the earth for centuries. Mm-hmm. Thanks for blowing my cover, Dan. Anyway,
blow up your spot.
So on this podcast, we talk about bad movies.
And, guys, it's Shocktober.
What, the scariest time of the year?
Well, we didn't have scary intro music that I got to hear. But maybe the people. Oh, I'm doing a shitty job here. You didn't play scary intro music us, Dan.
You don't need
to get us in the mood.
Evaluate in real time what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, the only reason we would need it is because technically we're recording this at the tail end of Smallvember for release in Shocktober.
Yeah.
There's a little peek behind the curtain, a little podcast magic.
Yeah, you know, I guess this is a good way to kind of ease ourselves into the season, probably the scariest season of the year. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the scariest season of the year to me is tax season.
Oh, wow. Brother. This guy has
now
got a real skewed take on modern life.
I take the ordinary, everyday kind of like irritations of modern life, and I apply my unique viewpoint. Yeah. It's in a series of books called Everything I Need to Know, I Learned Right Now from You.
Wow.
The books are blank. They cost $25. Fill them out. Send them to me. I got to start learning.
What a great scam.
So what do we do with Shocktober?
Shocktober is the part of the year that we watch scary movies or movies that are macabre in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I wouldn't...
Yes. Ty Macabre, the great baseball player.
I wouldn't necessarily say that the movie we watched tonight was particularly scary.
No, but it was gross.
It was in,
it was in
the Halloween tradition. It had one of the classic monsters.
One of the classic Halloween stories. Now, what story is it? Well, the movie's called Victor Frankenstein.
So guess.
You're right, The Mummy.
Good work, Einstein.
Yeah, Imhotep's back.
Famous literary detective Einstein. If you've got a story and you don't know what it is, there's only one man you can call on, and he works at the patent office in Bern. Oh,
he's not good at math, but he's a genius.
At story.
Yeah.
He was actually, I mean, he was better than the average person at math.
Okay.
Math was not his strongest suit as a theoretical physicist, but he would get help from other people to do the math work with him, but he was better at math than, like, we are.
Sure.
Yeah, if he had, like, a Marvel card on the back, if it had, like, power ratings, he would still be superhuman at math, but he wouldn't be, like, as good as he is at physics?
I mean, with math, he would be, like, let's say it's a 1 to 10 scale with 1 being normal math.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Math, 1 would be subnormal math. The same way there's that one checklist.
So that's like what the rhino would be at in math.
Yes, exactly. There's this one checklist
rhino?
Card.
Yeah, Spider-Man, Spider-Man villain.
Okay.
The rhino.
Except for that one Tangled Web storyline.
Notably not good at math?
I don't know.
He's just
I'm just
a big dumb dude.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a fucking rhino. What's he going to be good at two things, smashing into stuff and math?
That's right.
Anyway.
You're only good at one thing at once.
Thank you. I don't like this modern day, this ties into the movie, modern day thing where everyone's good at everything.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we all get a trophy. But anyway, so Einstein would get like a 4 in math, but he'd have a 10 in like conceptual imagination.
Okay.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting stat. Him and Doc Ock share a stat.
I mean, thanks for the teaching moment, Einstein, but I was just using. I was just using the popular conception of Einstein for comedic purposes.
Yeah, but it's not true, and I don't like it.
All right.
Comedy should be based on truth, unless it's really funny when it's made up.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Del Close Einstein.
Delbert Einstein. The mix of Del Close and Albert Einstein.
Truth He's
just It's just Albert Einstein with a heroin addiction. Anyway, here's the thing. We watched this movie, Victor Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
It's a retelling of the classic Frankenstein tale. Hollywood would probably refer to it as a legend, but I would refer to it as a novel written by Mary Shelley at a very specific
point
in time.
More accurate.
Right, the same way that there were the ads for Heart of the Sea, where they referred to the true story behind the legend of Moby Dick. And I was like, bullshit, dude, that was a novel Herman Melville wrote. You call that a legend? Come on.
Yeah, it wasn't like whalers were like, Moby Dick roams these seas.
It doesn't go back thousands of years.
Stormy legend tells that on stormy nights, you can see his blowhole. Blowing through the air.
You can still see that dick's hole, they say, if you look hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
Look hard enough for the dick hole.
Mm-hmm.
Spraying.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of dick hole, young Pete.
What? I don't like where this is going.
You're at sea for a long time, I'm just saying.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Do you think Frank Herbert Melville,
well, author of Moby Dune.
but do you think Herman Melville like heard all these
Somebody
stories
better be making
of
a Moby Dune
the,
cover
the right legends now. Of Moby Dick, and then but he was like moved to write the story down in novel form because Moby Dick would come to him at night in his attic and force him to tell the story or he'd chop his head off?
Yeah,
like
that was
Robert
probably
Howard
it.
And Conan.
That was probably it. Yeah, yeah. Probably it. That's probably exactly what happened.
Okay. Cool. So write
anyway,
that down.
Crack that one.
So I
hope that's in the movie that we didn't watch and we're, I guess,
I mean, Hard to See,
it.
I think, is framed by the narrative of someone telling Herman Melville this story, but I haven't seen it. But Victor Frankenstein is what we watched. It's the latest in a long line of Frankenstein reboots.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, why even call it a reboot? It's just a new adaptation. It's a new spin on the classic legend, nobody knows who wrote it, of Dr. Frankenstein and his creation, the monster.
And we went into this assuming it was part of Universal's attempt to build a cinematic universe like the
with
Marvel.
Dracula Untold.
Yeah.
And it turns out it was not. This is a 20th Century Fox film.
Mm-hmm. Although it does feature Charles Dance in a small role, just since, like he was in Dracula Untold.
And they're set
a very
in,
small role. In he shows up for one scene.
I even made a joke that he was never going to... He just shows up to be a dick and leaves, and that's totally
that's
all that happens.
Exactly what... I mean, there may have been other material
with him. He dances in and he dances out.
That's almost... exactly a quote from Tango and Cash.
Really?
He tangos in and he tangos on out with our money and our drugs. But
see, a key part of that Jack Palance impression is Elliot's wide eyes roaming the room.
Yeah.
There's not enough heavy breathing in that Jack Palance impression.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. The Tango and Cash. Cash and Tango. Tango makes three.
Where did you get
those? It's about a gay penguin.
Where did you get those mice that you're playing with, Elliot?
In this maze table I keep next to my miniature wall of mirrors that I use for shootouts. It's a somewhat whimsical office.
You're becoming a crib keeper, Jack.
James Hong, why are you each edging away from me? Well, we talked about every movie but Victor Frankenstein.
Yep.
So 20th Century Fox maybe was trying to steal Universal's thunder.
Uh-huh.
Charles Dance is in Dracula Untold as the character who's eventually, I assume, going to be the big bad that all the monsters have to face.
Uh-huh.
But I don't even know if they're still making those.
Yeah.
But this is, it's a new spin told from Igor's point of view, Victor Frankenstein.
What? Like a fucking Nick Carraway.
Nick Carraway seed.
Yeah. I mean, Victor Frankenstein is to Gatsby as Igor is to Nick Carraway, and this is pretty clear, I guess. And there's a Daisy character, there's a Tom Miller character.
Yep.
They're all there.
See? It holds up.
Now, we begin, I don't know, because I was running late, and you guys started the movie without me. So as it begins.
You missed almost nothing.
Okay, Elliot, why don't you guess how the movie begins?
My guess would be...
You get one guess, and if you're right, Dan will give you $100.
Wow, I'll take those odds. And what happens if I guess wrong?
Dan will give you $50.
Okay, that sounds great.
And a lap dance.
That's worth $50 right there. I'm breaking even. Mm-hmm. My guess, seeing as this is a retelling of a monster story, and this is the year 2016, and nobody's learned their fucking lesson, is my guess is that it opens with some kind of like cryptic scene from future in the movie with a voiceover talking about how, like, some stories people think they know, but you don't really know the real story behind the story.
You are 100% correct. They literally show shots of the monster hanging up during the storm. While Daniel Radcliffe, who plays Igor in this movie,
mm-hmm.
tells you, like, you know him as this dude, but he was actually my friend. Do you think you know the story, et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, I hate that stuff so much.
All right, well, one.
Count it out.
Two.
Give it to me in pennies.
Three. We'll do this after the show.
Yeah, maybe later. But I appreciate you paying up on the bet. Because here, like, I only don't like it because I've seen it so many times before. If it had never been done before, then... If I guessed that and you told me it was right.
If you had seen a totally original concept on film, you would have liked it.
Exactly.
That's super weird.
It's strange, right?
If you experience a brand new sensation, you'd be up for that.
I guess what I'm saying is there's nothing inherently wrong with opening a story that way, except that it's been done thousands of times before. The same way that Hallelujah, a perfectly mediocre song,
mm-hmm.
is only hateful because it's been used 100 million ways.
Yeah. Now, but what if it's sung by Katie Sagal while the characters of Sons of Anarchy are getting into some kind of motorcycle hijinks?
I mean, I like Katie Sagal, and she started as a singer. She's got the chops.
Mm-hmm.
She'll always be Peg Bundy to me, though.
Okay.
Oh, wow. That's a firm stance you're taking over there.
No matter
Dan,
what else
you
want to
say something about Leela?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that I would appreciate it more if Leela sang Hallelujah in mm-hmm. some mournful episode of Futurama.
As it shows the other Zoidberg being murdered and
exactly.
the Jamaican accountant, whatever his name was, being
Hermes.
Killed. Hermes. And Hermes Conrad, that's right.
And I'll always remember Katie Sagal as I'm assuming she's a witch on Bastard Executioner.
You'll never know. I think that show ended.
Stuart's going to be like, I'll always remember Katie Sagal as the older woman who took my virginity.
And threw it out the window to be devoured by crabs.
What?
It was at a beachside resort.
I see. Anyway, let's get back to the movie. So Daniel Radcliffe plays Igor, who starts out as a tortured hunchback without even a name to his name
mm-hmm.
in a circus. And
yep.
I assume he was sold to the circus as a child, as deformed. He's mistreated. They've made him up like a clown. Everyone mm-hmm. makes fun of him. He's got a crush on an acrobat lady who's nice to him.
Yeah, she's played by the... Arguably the hot.
Why would you this is something you said during the movie. I don't know why you'd commit it to recording.
From Downton Abbey.
You have now opened up an unnecessary debate, one, about the hotness of the sisters on Downton Abbey, and two, on whether we as men are judging these characters only on their hotness.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, did you arguably because you're covering your own ass?
Lady Mary has her charms.
I don't even watch Downton Abbey. Yeah. Is that Maggie Smith? Because she's amazing.
All I know is that Maggie Smith is Downton Crabby in that show. That's all that I know about.
Downton Grabby?
She's very grabby.
And he also, not only does he have a crush on this acrobat woman, but he's also a tender soul who spends his time doing super amazing drawings of human anatomy.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
studying medical texts that he, I guess, scavenges.
Oh, so
from
he was studying
piles.
Medical texts.
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that part too. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was just like naturally gifted at knowing bodies.
I mean, he is too. It's both these things.
And once they took him to the bodies exhibit.
He's got gifted
and
hands.
Saw all those
like,
Chinese corpses with their skin
like
taken
what's
off.
His face?
He has all those incredible cross sections.
That's what it is. He what?
I said he has gifted hands, like, you know, what's his face? The guy who wrote Gifted Hands. The guy who was...
Ben Carson?
Yeah, Ben Carson.
Okay. I mean, you work for The Daily Show.
Yeah.
You should remember these names. I haven't worked there in like a year.
Mm-hmm. I get one of those Eternal Sunshine brain wipes at the end
every
of the day.
Week.
Just to try and keep things clean in there.
Oh, that's a good idea, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we have
one
magical
day,
hunchback.
One magical hunchback, and one day there's a trouble at the circus. The acrobat falls. She seems to be dead. Luckily, there's a doctor in the... Is there a doctor in the house? Classic Bugs Bunny gift. Is there a doctor in the house? Is there a doctor in the house? Silhouette walks, gets on the. I'm a doctor. And what's up, Doc? Then on to the next gag. It turns out.
Solid stuff, Bugs Bunny.
James McAvoy, Dr. Victor Frankenstein, is in the audience. And together he with.
Though he appears to be somewhat eccentric.
He seems like
he knows his stuff. He has his chops.
He's a little goofy and looks. Isn't
like he has this ability where if he stares at a. Organic body in motion, he'll see like its bone structure like sketched out over its silhouette.
It is not
a real Sherlock Doc.
It's
Sherdock. Which is appropriate since the show was directed by a guy who's directed a bunch of episodes of Sherlock.
Yes.
Right?
And they really like
they Sherlocked up
these characters. And let me just say one thing. I'm gonna reveal a little bit.
Okay.
The first third of this movie, I really enjoyed a lot.
Uh-huh.
And we'll get into it. It's super gross.
I mean,
at
you
times.
Were totally eating a bunch of chicken at that point, so maybe you're just predisposed to liking it. You have umami splattered all over
your
face.
I mean, the fact that I was eating the most delicious food that existed. I mean, usually though, that just serves to heighten how shitty what I'm seeing is because I eat the same thing every movie. So I think we can just eliminate that as an element because it's the same condition every single time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. After a while, even ambrosia loses its flavor.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that because that environmental factor is the same for every single film, we cannot take it to be an influence on my feelings about this film. For else, we'd have to take it as an influence on my feelings for films like Food Fight, which again, I was eating Popeyes while watching, and yet it was a horrifying experience. Only the solace of Popeyes in my mouth was what got me through it.
I thought it was because we had you chained to the chair you were sitting in.
I mean, and you had my eyes pulled open, like Clockwork Orange style, yeah. Mm-hmm. What's that therapy called?
The Ludovico treatment?
Yeah, the Ludovico treatment. That's what you're doing. The Foodovico treatment.
Oh!
Hey-oh!
Okay, so let's get back to this fucking turn.
Yeah, because we're like, 10 minutes into the movie?
Yep.
So they're able to save the acrobat's life by doing one of those movie medical things where James McAvoy looks at her, sees the bone structure drawn as if it's in a medical textbook, and says, like, hit her right there. And they, like, slam their fists into her chest.
Yeah, but actually, Igor, like... McAvoy like knows what's going on, but Igor is the one who's like, we gotta like punch her like medical style.
Yep, he's like, I have a secret crush on her, so I want to be the one punching her chest.
Yeah.
McAvoy is really impressed and he's like, Igor, except he doesn't have a name. He goes,
you and me, buddy.
Unnamed hunchback, we gotta get you out of here. The hunchback is locked up by his evil circus captors.
Mm-hmm.
James McAvoy uses science to help him escape and then uses punching and kicking to fight their way through the circus of crime. And it was at this point, it was like a choose your own adventure. If I wanted to be pissed off that, just like in every other movie, this character who's already a mad scientist who wants to bring back the dead is also some kind of fighting genius.
Yeah, he's great at kick-punching.
And be mad about that because it's not necessary in whatever happened to movies where people had a strength that was balanced by a weakness.
And whatever happened to Baby Jane?
She got crazy.
Oh, okay.
It's all actually explained very well in the movie.
All right.
Turn to page 20. But if I want to just buy into the zaniness of it all and say, hey, you know what? Instead of applying good movie terms to this, I'm going to apply crazy movie terms to this. And this is two guys, one of them a hunchback dressed like a clown, fighting their way through an evil circus.
Yeah, a hunchback Robert Smith from The Cure.
Yeah, but like turn to page 45, and I turned to page 45.
Yeah.
I chose that adventure of saying, you know what movie? I'm going to buy into it, which is why it was that much more of a disappointment when the movie fell apart later. But anyway, they fight their way through the circus. They get out. Everything's okay, right? It looks to be that way at first because James McAvoy has a cool bachelor pad full of crazy steampunk inventions. Mm-hmm. And he shows...
We get to see this really awesome scene where we realize that Igor, who is named Igor at this point, we get a name.
Because he says, my landlord is named Igor. He's not around. If anyone asks, you're Igor.
Mm-hmm. And of course they pause so the audience can be like, whoa, this is a huge moment we're witnessing in history.
That's how it happened.
Yep.
I would have just assumed that, like,
I thought this was a different hunchback.
Yeah.
In a Frankenstein movie.
I figure that maybe, like, just someone would give him that name. Like, I don't know, his parents or somebody.
I thought maybe he could have just been named Igor from the beginning of the movie, and that maybe we didn't need an origin for a name that is not a crazy. It's not like he got the name Flash Lightningberg or like Google Eyes Bubby, like a crazy name
Flash
we would need an origin for.
The Jewish speed superhero.
He's Jewish and he has the power to be guilted by his parents in the blink of an eye.
I always assumed that Igor was an acronym based on some kind of physical attribute of his.
Yeah. I got.
Yep.
Orange.
Ostrich.
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 Ribs.
Ribs.
Okay, yep. I got ostrich. That's what I always assumed was the case.
That it was like intelligent guardian for operational research, something like that. Yeah. Like it's an acronym, like Wildcats.
Yeah.
You know, or MASC.
Wait, what was Wildcats?
Covert Action Team Squad.
That makes sense.
I think it was just Covert Action Teams.
Mm-hmm.
Wild was not an acronym. Just cats.
There was a descriptor, yeah.
Do I want the sane cat or the wild cat?
Well, the wild cat's $50 cheaper, so might as well take that.
Yeah. It'll go better up against Wetworks. But
also an acronym.
I don't think that it was.
I know it wasn't.
So there were, and he, and James McAvoy cures Igor of his hunch. He says, you're not really a hunchback. You have an enormous abscess full of pus. And he stabs him in the back with a tube and then starts pumping it out. But then to really prime it, he sticks his mouth on the other end of the tube and siphons it out and has to spit out all this abscess pus.
Yeah.
And it was at this point that I was like, I made the right decision by deciding to like this movie because this is disgusting.
Yeah.
And it's not what I expected at all. And here's the main strength of this movie, which does not, unfortunately, the movie doesn't continue with after a certain point, but it like really gets across how disgusting the human body is and how gross it would be to be working with dead body parts and trying to put them together and zap them with electricity. Like all the other Frankenstein movies that I've seen, I've never seen like Flesh for Frankenstein, which I guess is more of a sex movie.
Uh-huh.
But like all the other ones are pretty sanitary and clean, considering the main characters are literally ripping organs apart and stuffing them together and sewing things and like...
Yeah, our heroes are grave robbers.
Yeah, and to really get across like how viscerally gross that is, like I was saying, Stuart, while we were watching...
And how like rudimentary the science is.
Yes, that if Stuart Gordon had been making this movie, it would have been a really fun movie.
It would have been even disgusting.
Grosser. Like it would have been really disgusting. So he sucks all the pus out and he fixes Igor's back with a back brace and then he shows him, I had this experiment... I have a pair of human eyes I've kept preserved in this briny liquid. And using electricity, I can make it...
For fun.
I can make it so that they open and wink. And if I put fire up to them, they close because of the brightness. These eyes I've kept alive. And we're going to do that with an animal. These eyes are briny. These eyes have seen a lot of brine, but they'll never see a pickle like you.
So, I don't know about you guys. I've interviewed a lot of roommates.
Okay.
And
you're usually like, do you have eyes preserved in brine? Because if so,
then we'll have two of them in this apartment, because here's mine.
Private eyes are watching you from a briny place.
I thought briny eyes are watching you.
Oh, that's even better. Yeah, that's damn. Damn. Your Hall & Oates parody abilities are way better than mine. Briny eyes. Whoa, here they come. She's a brine eyer.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, you're saying
that doesn't even have eyes in it.
You're a Stitch girl.
Briny Davis eyes.
Oh, damn it.
Nobody knows what it's like to be briny, to be slimy behind brine eyes.
My brine eyes girl.
Sha la 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 briny eyes. It's the eye of the briner. It's the eyes in the brine, and they're sitting in a vat of gross brine.
Do you guys already turn around brine eyes?
No.
Why are you not taking part in this,
Stuart? Why, don't pretend you're above this, but clearly you're jonesing to be a part of it. You're the cool kid standing off by himself, seeing the nerdy kids dancing, looking dumb, and you're like, I wish I could have fun like them, but I just can't do it.
Mm-hmm. I don't admit that.
So you've been interviewing roommates.
Wait, what are we talking
about? I'll pretend that what Dan just said was English. What were you saying about interviewing roommates?
Yeah, yeah, I normally show them my brine eyes. Now, meanwhile, we cut to a police detective who's investigating...
played by Sherlock's Moriarty, don't remember his name.
Yeah, which is one of the many people from TV Sherlock who make an appearance in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Who's investigating the murdered Carney, who was killed they were escaping.
Carney Wilson was murdered. Very sad.
Terrible. There was one of the carnies was killed by another carny, but the carnival owner says that this evil hunchback and this madman who helped him escape did it. The cop sees through this pretty quickly, but he still wants to arrest them because he knows that someone has been stealing animal parts and is using them for nefarious, ungodly purposes.
Yeah, he's a real god walloper, this guy.
He's really
like,
religious.
He's like Austin 316, this and that.
Austin, he's like, know your role, Frankenstein. And he also has the walls of his office are covered in written like grease pencil on glass notes because it's like steampunk Minority Report or Beautiful Mind or Sherlock. It's all stuff we've seen before. But
And the guy who plays Moriarty, who is playing not Moriarty in this movie, is basically reprising his role. It's the same...
Andrew Scott.
Yeah, it's the same performance of like...
Just call him Moriarty.
Well, I will call him Moriarty.
Like monotone Inspector. Delivery. And the thing is that as much as, you know, it's funny that he's basically reprising his role, he and our two leads... actually fucking go for it. Like, they are not... they're not playing around.
No, they're
movie.
All acting up a storm.
They're really, like...
Daniel Radcliffe, after they fix his back and drain the abscess, it seems like he's like, well, I still kind of want to play a hunchback, so I'm going to walk super weird the rest of the movie.
And Daniel Radcliffe, he kind of loses his weirdness. The movie loses its weirdness as it goes along, which is disappointing. But James McAvoy is always chewing screenery. Screamery. And Moriarty's always chewing the scenery. And, like, in a movie like this, that's great. Like, I'm already watching a movie about a 19th century scientist who's trying to bring back dead bodies. Like, chew it up. Go for it. Like, be in the tradition of Colin Clive and Basil Rathbone and, like, all the guys who are not afraid to chew scenery, you know?
Yeah.
And Frankenstein was written at, like, Mary Shelley is associated with, like, the romantic poets. Like, you can be a little bit over the top here, guys.
Yeah, it's very
florid.
It's very much a, it's a romantic...
very romantic.
We all know how we're using romantic, not to mean love, but to mean like German romanticism, you know, high romanticism.
It's a little romantic between Igor and Victor Frankenstein.
It is. There's some real homoerotic tension there. It's also called friendship.
Yeah.
It's more of a bromance.
They're a little close,
I guess. I mean, they touch a lot.
I feel like there's an undercurrent. There's a sizzling undercurrent of electricity.
I guess so, but that's fine. I mean, that's in the source material.
Yeah.
Not really, actually. It's not. But,
well, Igor doesn't exist in the source material.
Yeah, but if by a source material, I would say the original Frankenstein movies, I guess.
Sure.
There's not a sexual element there, but there is an element of a relationship in which there's a dominant and a passive member, you know? And That reminds me
of... And like old Pinhead says, sometimes the lines of pleasure and pain get blurred.
For a long time ago, I wanted to write a Frankenstein story where a bunch of people get their car breaks down or whatever, and they have to go stay at the Frankenstein castle, mm-hmm. and things go, and Frankenstein wants them to watch his big experiment that happens to be the night when he's going to bring the dead back to life, and it doesn't work, and he goes crazy and goes on a rampage and tries to kill them because they've seen him fail, and in the end Igor has to like calm him down and says to them, like, just go, this happens all the time. Like, this is, and they're like, why do you stay? And he's like, I love him. That's why I stay. And like, that's the Frankenstein story I always wanted to do, where like Frankenstein's just a failure and Igor is the one who is really the dominant one in the relationship and allows Frankenstein's delusion to continue that he's a scientist. But I don't have the time to write that shit. So I guess I just did. Yeah. Deal with it. Somebody else write it up.
Yeah. Trademark.
Slap my name
shit
on it. Say story by Elliot Kalin. Anyway, the,
traditional fee of $700,000,
please.
That's great. See, I've been working on a screenplay idea myself where it's just I got a nugget.
Okay, let's hear it.
The idea is that it's a training scene where you're like hero is being trained by his old mentor.
Okay,
for I don't know, to kill vampires or survive the apocalypse, one of those things. And, they don't have access to proper training facilities, so they're like, we got to go train outside in the park. But they don't want people to see them training out in the park to kill zombies or some shit. So they have to dress up to look like those crazy guys who perform martial arts in the park. So people see them and they're when you see those guys and glance at them and you're like, do not make eye contact.
There was a guy in Prospect Park.
He's got a boombox and he is practicing his kata with this, war fan or something.
Were you there the day that we saw that guy in Prospect Park?
Where the guy had a shopping cart full of weapons, including a war fan and a bunch of sai.
Throwing knives into the ground.
It was awesome.
Like 10 feet away from a baby picnic party.
Yeah.
It was so weird.
Now imagine a story where he's the hero and he's actually a normal guy. He just dresses and acts like a weirdo because like, this is the only way I can train.
If I looked normal, people would think the jig is up. If I look like a crazy person.
Yeah.
Maybe
it'll
work.
I think I got something there.
Yeah, maybe.
Got a couple of good movie ideas.
Yeah, it's like a Remo Williams type movie.
The adventure begins. Uh-huh. Has to uh-huh. continue. Now, by this point, Frankenstein and Igor, they're working together as a team. They're partners. They're both providing valuable insights and necessary knowledge. They have gotten to the point where they can bring to shuddering life for a few moments or like an hour a horrible, desiccated, half-fleshed chimpanzee corpse with other species mm-hmm. sewn to it. And
this is a real creep show of a chimpanzee.
Yeah.
Just imagine like – you know, when they say the joke of, I should not be alive. Well, this is that thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's a hilarious joke.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's like, well, it's a living.
Yeah, that's right.
But, when they first showed it, I did not realize that was a chimpanzee. That's how mangled
it
was.
No, I just thought it was like a pile of hamburger meat.
With teeth.
With electrodes.
Mm-hmm. And but they managed to make it kind of come to life. So they say, it's time. We're going to go to the medical college where the stodgy old fuddy-duddies won't let me do my real research, and we're going to do a demonstration. Uh-huh. And this was another touch that I liked, is that it's not in like a huge lecture hall attended by the professors. It's like they rented one of the rooms, and there's seven people in the audience. And it felt very much like Victor.
Well, they had someone in Times Square handing out things saying, do you like science? Science?
You like tampering in God's domain? You like it?
Yeah, hey, do tonight.
You know, we got comedians who appeared on Comedy Central, tampering in God's domain here.
It's a small room, and even so, with that tiny audience, it looks empty.
Yeah.
Kind of like one of our early Flophouse live shows.
Not really. We've always been pretty successful with those. But it did remind me of, like, my early days doing sketch comedy when I was performing in a strip club for audiences of up to mm-hmm. 2 to 3 people at midnight.
Or when I was in an improv group that performed in a place that was a yoga studio by day, and we regularly had more performers on stage than we had people in the audience.
Classic experience. So that was kind of a nice touch. But there's one student there who's, you can tell he's super rich and super obnoxious.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a Draco Malfoy.
Who's like, hurry up. I have a coach waiting. Mm. And it looks like it's not working.
There to laugh at Victor Frankenstein. He's like, oh, Victor, you do amuse with your science.
With your failures and incompetence. And Igor, who at this point, we've skipped over the romantic subplot. James Frankenstein is he because of his wealthy father who doesn't approve of him. He's a member
played by
of
Charles Dance.
Played by Charles Dance in one scene. He's a member.
I think his contract was like, I'll only do the movie if I get to show up and slap James McAvoy.
He knows what he did.
They are members
it's
of
not in the script, Charles, but I guess you can.
The director goes, I'll allow it.
Your character is supposed to show up and give your son a hug, but I guess we can rewrite it.
What is a slap but a sharp hug to the cheek? I suppose, Charles Dance. Yeah, why not? You know, originally, Tywin Lannister was supposed to be a really nice guy, and Charles Dance met George R. R. Martin. He said, I might play this character someday. Make him a real shit.
What is a slap but a sharp hug to the cheek? It's like something an abusive father would say.
Yeah, I'm hugging you real hard to the face. They're members of an exclusive social club where James McAvoy is not taken seriously, but the acrobat who has healed from her injuries and is now the she's been taken under the wing of a gay aristocrat who uses her as a beard. She meets Igor, and that it's love at first, whatever, you know, and they've slowly become more and more lovey-dovey, and he invites her to this exposition.
Yeah, he's like, you want to see a chimpanzee corpse?
You want to see a gross half-zombie monkey shudder around on a table because we're zapping it with electrodes?
He knows what a lady's like.
LL Cool ZHC. Now, ladies love cool zombie chimps.
Now, if this movie really wanted to lean into the horror side, there would have been a moment where she would see what they've made and how horrible it looks. And for him to look like, look, isn't it great?
Yeah.
Like a moment of stark reality, but no, it doesn't do that.
No. Instead, well, I mean, they show
she
it.
She just seems sort of worried.
She's just like,
well, what are they doing with that hamburger meat?
She seems maybe like she just has like a stomach ache, a mild stomach ache.
And they zap it and a bunch of flies come out of it, and it looks like they're failures until they give it maximum power. Mm-hmm. And Richie Rich is heckling them. And once they zap it with max power, it starts breathing and it gets up. And it's running around. This chimp zombie's running around. It's screeching to people.
It's like, I'm not practical effects anymore.
Now I'm CG. And before this point, there's been a ton of great practical effects. Like real gross-looking zombie bodies.
Meat slabs,
and meat faces.
Ground meat.
Mm-hmm. And now it's CGI. But it would be hard, to be honest, it would be hard to do, even with today's practical effects, like without it costing a ton more money, a realistic-looking zombie chimp racing around.
Yeah. It's like, even when he was alive, you couldn't get Kenny Baker in there to pilot the thing.
Billy Barty. Maybe.
They have a pretty great zombie chimp chase where Daniel Radcliffe is like, there's a kind of a funny moment where the chimp is like running towards a door where like people are like walking behind it, and like Daniel Radcliffe
No.
They can't see our shame.
Because he's so much more worried about embarrassment than he is that this zombie chimp will bite his face off. But there's a point where
there's multiple points where they're like wrestling with it, and it makes me physically disgusted.
Because it's so gross. And here's the Stuart Gordon difference. If it was Stuart Gordon, he would have had a close-up. When they're grappling with it, he would have had close-ups of the fingers sinking into the goopy, like, mush that it's made out of, and pulling their hands away, and there'd be, like, a sticky strand of ooze.
Goo.
It would be like when
Sam Raimi or Peter Jackson would have done the same.
And the monkey then would have, like, vomited in someone's mouth, and they would have vomited. And everyone would have vomited, like, in Stand By Me. Or, like, in Hateful Eight, that one big vomit scene, which is what my wife and I went to see it, and her eyes were closed during the whole, like, blood-killing stuff. And then there's a part where he's just vomiting torrents of blood. Spoiler alert. I don't want to tell you what character. I went, whoa! And she opened her eyes again and then shut them, and I was like, why'd you open your eyes? She goes, you laughed at it. I thought it was over. I thought the gore was over because he laughed.
I do that all.
You're like, do you understand me at all?
We've been married for 5 years. Come on.
But I'm assuming you guys are the same way, but anytime I see something horribly gross on the screen, especially in a theater full of people,
you laugh.
I crack up. When we saw Green Room, there were parts where I'm like, oh, shit.
It's not even that convincing an effect, but the first time I saw a Taxi Driver, when the guy goes, hey, and Travis Bickle just blows his fingers off, I laughed at that because it was like, I don't know how to process this.
Yeah, I'm like,
I gotta
rewind this and watch this thing like five times in a row.
I gotta funny games this and rewind and watch it again. But there's a point, and so she is edging closer to the zombie chimp. The zombie chimp, for a moment, is tranquilized by her beauty, and then and then snarls. And Daniel Radcliffe, for some reason, thinks it's a good idea to throw a lamp at it so that the fire forces it to jump towards his love. But it runs out the door, and there is a really good kind of chimp grapple chase where Igor's just got to wrestle this chimp to the ground and get
sometimes
it to a place.
Sometimes you got to wrestle a chimp.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that chimp had an Igor on his back. And get it to the point where James McAvoy can smash its head in to kill it. And it was at this point that the movie reached its height. Like, that was the most success. Like, the movie was at its height of success. And from that point on, it just became a pretty boilerplate. The cop is looking into it further. They decide they're going to make a human. He's mad. James McAvoy is mad that Daniel Radcliffe is spending time with this girl instead of working on their project.
They interact with the cop. The cop shows up and explains, like, oh, I'm on to you. And they're like, you don't have a warrant. And he's like, I'm going to go get a warrant because apparently that's how the fucking process law works back then.
I mean, I don't know anything about 19th century London law, but I kind of I don't know that. I mean, maybe it's in the Magna Carta. I don't know. You need a warrant. That you, like, and there's this all these 16th century police things where they're like, open up. You have the jewels. Holds up a copy of the Magna Carta. Get a warrant, copper. You can't search me, oval.
Yeah, they've got the fucking Miranda rights. Like, you have the right to remain silent. You have the right to a barrister. If you have no barrister, then one will be appointed to you.
The rich kid is like, I misjudged you, Frankenstein. I'm going to fund your work.
I want you to build me an army of these gross chimps.
Of zombie chimps, because that's the closest I'm ever going to get to being Danny DeVito in Batman Returns, when he had an army of penguins with missiles strapped to their backs. So do this for me, Dr. Frankenstein. Unfortunately, the police inspector, even though he's obsessively obsessed with the case, because of it, he decides, I got to take them down. What they're doing is blasphemy against God. And
Victor Frankenstein was working in his lab late one night when his eyes beheld a dreadful sight, and it was Moriarty banging on the door, trying to get
and
in.
Two cops doing the most lackadaisical battering ram work.
That's right.
Now, Igor gets there in the midst of it because he first banging with his girlfriend.
Which, at that's when we realize, why does she have a tattoo on her shoulder? It's really weird. It feels like a makeup mistake where they're like, let's just leave it. I guess she was a sailor.
She's like an acrobat. That's kind of a saucy profession.
Like, that society is just going to accept her?
Yeah, I don't see that.
It's a weird movie set in 19th century England that seems to have no sense of the class system of England, except that some people are rich.
Or the legal system, as we just mentioned.
Or the legal system. Some people are rich. Some people aren't as rich. What are you going to do? Also, some people are slaves to circuses. I don't know. But it's classic movie shorthand. We know that Daniel Radcliffe has had sex because we've seen him with his shirt off with the girl. And the next scene, he's not wearing a tie and a hat anymore.
And he's fucking strutting.
And he
cock
is
of the walk.
Laid back. Yeah, he is like, this guy's gotten drained for the first time.
Oh, boy.
He could have basically snatched an apple off like a passing cart and fucking chomped on it.
Looks in a shop window and just kind of gives himself a, hey, nice going there, guy.
Going walking down the street saying, what a day it has been. What a rare mood I'm in. You know how it goes.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like being inside of a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, disgusting.
He passes a peasant woman that they had peasants back then, right?
Mm-hmm. Most of them. They didn't call them peasants. They
dances
them
with her for a second and spins her.
She goes,
buy me apples, sir. Here's 10 bob. I don't know. How much is that? Thank you, sir. Bites coin, runs off. Hee, hee, hee. To the alehouse with me. Apple Annie.
To the opium den to chase the dragon.
I want to follow Apple Annie's story now.
To the opium. The opium den to play Double Dragon. They got an arcade game there.
Oh no, beware of the Peaky Blinders and the Abobos.
So Igor gets there and he's like, huh? He gets in through the secret trap door because everywhere that this movie takes place, there's always a secret trap door. Mm-hmm. In the below a circus tent, there's a secret trap door that they escape through. Mm-hmm. In the lab, there's a secret trap door that leads to their like organ freezer. And so later there's a castle with a secret trap door. Anyway, and he says to James McAvoy, we got to get out of here. James McAvoy goes, no, I'm going to destroy my equipment. Then I'll escape. No one's going to have it. Moriarty breaks in. They have a fight in the middle of it. James McAvoy manages to stick Moriarty's hands between some gears, thus destroying the hand, and the sparks blind him in one eye.
That's pretty great.
But it's one of those weird things where it was like, did they think, because like, Young Frankenstein takes off of Son of Frankenstein, where there's a police officer who has a wooden arm because the monster tore it off of him when he was a child. Did they feel like they had to nod to that? Like, well, of course, it's part of the established Frankenstein canon now that there's a police officer with a wooden arm. Goes without saying.
Or did they, like the movie
by
does,
some process of convergent evolution, did they just get, like, is it a wink to that or is it not?
I think it's a wink because I feel like there were a lot of winks to, like, Frankenstein.
To past movies.
Yeah, I mean, there's even a point where the acrobat calls Frankenstein Frankenstein, and he corrects
her.
Yeah,
as a joke. Yeah, that's true.
Although
which makes
I'm
me wonder if the people who made this know
just
that
watched
the
Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, and thought that was the movie they were rebooting.
I don't. If you're gonna have a scene where a kind of bad guy gets his hand stuck between some gears and it gets mangled off. Mm-hmm. Like, why not do at least one shot of that thing squirting blood and bones and crap all
yes,
over the place?
Show us the mangling.
And him going,
like a real face with one long spurt of blood coming out of it. Like, that's exactly where the hose
that
is. That would
have been great. That's all I want. Like, even fucking Romancing the Stone has that.
Yeah.
Even Romancing the Stone, which otherwise is the pinnacle of special effects. I don't understand. Which otherwise, what is...
otherwise, it's the gentlest movie.
Yeah. Otherwise... Is just a romp through a tea room. Even my dinner with Andre. Yes. But I guess flash forward a little bit. They're at the rich guy's house, and the rich kid says, my family has a castle. Go there. I'll set you up. Make me a monster man. And Igor's like, I don't want to do that. Igor's also found out that the original Igor, Frankenstein, froze his body and took his eyes for that eye experiment. Mm-hmm. And Igor's like, you took his eyes? And it's like, dude, where did you think he got a pair of human eyes for his experiment? He had to take them out of a human head. He didn't mold them out of clay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He went down to the eye store for the new eye...
He
couldn't go down to the iWorks in New Los Angeles of Blade Runner and order a bunch of eyes from Mr. Chu, whatever his name was.
Mm-hmm.
But they split their ways. This is the part in Shrek where Shrek and the donkey get mad at each other and go their separate paths
for reasons.
And so Igor, I guess, is just hanging and banging with his girlfriend.
No, the rich guy throws a bag over his head.
Oh, you're right.
Like, you know too much. We're going to chuck you in the water.
I forgot about that. The rich guy tries to kill Igor. Igor escapes.
Yeah, because he's a circus guy, so he knows how to escape from being thrown into the water.
Like the boringest, stupidest digression.
That's what happens to a circus guy every day.
You learn that stuff. He's an escape artist. He's a Mr. Miracle. He says, I got to warn Victor that this rich kid's probably going to kill him and take his technology, which at this point, not the most marketable.
No,
all you've been able to show is that you can turn perfectly dead chimpanzees into maniac monster zombie chimpanzees. Again, not on the open market. I don't know how much that's worth. So they go to the castle, and they have to evade the police, because even though the inspector has been kicked off the force...
He's been kicked off the force due to improperly filing paperwork, it seems.
And because he has this crazy wooden hand now with individual fingers, as if he's going to be able to move it like Ash in Army of Darkness style.
Yeah, or maybe he just wants to have a hand that he can pose for life drawing.
Could be, Or he wants to be able to flip people the bird, so he needs individually articulated fingers.
Yeah, he's
fingers.
Like, hold on, let me, hold on, as he like, curls each finger down
individually.
He's like, give me a second, what's the hand symbol for Rip'em from No Holds Barred, the Hulk Hogan movie?
So Igor has to evade the cops, he gets to the castle, it's the night of the big experiment.
Dance.
Yeah, it's night of the big prom, and Igor doesn't have a date. I don't remember.
He has two dates, actually, and he has to rush back and forth between each one.
And one of them's a real monster. Mm-hmm. Literally. Now, I can't remember how much time is supposed to have elapsed. I guess he had to recover, so that's given Dr. Frankenstein time to, like, get his stuff together.
Get an army of goons.
Because at the castle, he has got a huge staff of people. They have... It's enormous, all these electrodes. There's an open fire pit for some reason.
Because
I guess Hephaestus was working on the project. Or maybe once they brought the monster to life, they were going to celebrate with s'mores.
They're all wearing steampunk leather gear, wandering around.
Some people just have goggles and leather aprons. Some people have, like, full leather face masks. Kind of like
Cobra Commander when he's not wearing the silver face.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. It's like a cross between the really scary... place in that David Lynch 1 minute long movie I recommended a while ago, mm-hmm. Premonition of a
Premonition of a shit
something with a crime,
mm-hmm.
I can't believe I forgot the name of it. And it's, or like they've wandered into every bad guy's lair from every Hellboy story.
Yep.
Where it's like a castle with like a bunch of electrodes and guys in leather masks. Mm-hmm.
And a head floating around in a suspensor chamber.
Yeah, going like, ah, wound, ah, tongue, ah, mine, gazelle, ah,
ibs. And you're like, oh man, there's going to be a fucking robot gorilla around the next corner.
At some point, because Mike Mignola just loves to draw those. And at some point, Hellboy's going to be like, damn, crap, and punch somebody with his big rock fist. Oh, what a great comic book.
Yeah.
Anyway. Igor gets there. It's the night of the big, gonna bring a guy back to life. It's very elaborate. Igor manages to sneak in and finds Dr. Frankenstein and says, your rich buddy's crazy. He's gonna kill you when this is all done. This isn't you. You're not crazy, which ignores all the evidence we've seen throughout the entire movie, which shows us he is a crazy madman who wants to bring people back to life. There's a whole backstory about his brother died because he was saving him from some snow. That's why he wants to balance the charts. And,
yeah, the
and
movie tries for a moment to have this epiphany where Igor has, you know, is remembering something that Dr. Frankenstein said about and like a story that involves his brother dying, and he draws some kind of correlation. And then when he relates this analogy or the story to Frankenstein, Frankenstein's like, no, you drew the wrong conclusion, which is a fun device. Like, like that reminds me of there was an issue of Preacher where somebody was like, oh, you felt this way because of this thing. Right. And the guy's like, that's not true. Blah, blah, blah. Now you're dead.
It's
bang.
Like, ever since I saw this dead girl in this massacre.
Yeah.
And, oh, and you wanted to protect people like that. What was it like? No, I thought it was stupid.
Yeah.
You
know? Classic Garth Ennis.
Or whatever. I don't know what Hair Star says.
No,
in that,
I know. Yeah. I mean, you fleshed out that story better than I did. But it felt a little bit.
But here in the movie, like, it was basically like, it was not so different. Like,
yeah, the two stories, like, it was, you want to stop people from having to feel pain about death. No, no, no. I want to atone for my brother's death. Okay, that's not that different.
It would have been by balancing the scale.
It would have been the way I would have done it is, I mean, is that, well, it wouldn't have gotten to that point anyway, but I would have been much better. Sorry, Max Landis. You've written many more screenplays than me, but whatever. But the way, what I would have done at that point is he would have said, "I know your brother died and you blame yourself and you don't want other people to go through that pain," and him to be like, "What? My brother was weak. My brother is dead. I don't want that to happen to me, to be weak like him. I want to be strong. I want to come back. So I'm going to bring back as many other people as it takes so that I never have to die." And then he, like that, he's crazy. And that's a real misreading of it. That like, oh, you think I feel sad that my brother died? I just pity him. That's pathetic. He was older than me. He should be cooler than me. Mm-hmm. Literally, he was cooler than me. He died of hypothermia in the snow, saving me. And it's like, dude. Check your own self.
You're splitting hairs, Victor. Keep going with your story.
And I apologize. Tangent. Anyway, and especially in my big moment. But here's the thing. I was like, this guy who I looked up to, he's so uncool, he died. You know what? Cool people never die. Michael Jackson, he's going to live forever. And Igor's like, I got some bad news for you. Ooh, he's dead now. Oh, well,
But David Bowie, surely.
But David Bowie is super cool. He can't even be held by gender. Certainly mortality is. No, again, sorry, it happens to everyone.
But Prince, of course, he's the...
I got so much... You've really been working on this project for a long time. You really missed a lot of the news. But Kurt Cobain? I really would have thought you'd have heard of that one. No, that's...
That's a little taste of some of the stuff we lost from the DC show.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Wait, the Big Bopper?
Oh, boy. That was somehow before you were born, even though this is the 19th century. But please tell me the Big Bopper, Buddy Holly, and Richie Valens are still with us. It's interesting that you chose those three specifically. But what about the members of Lynyrd Skynyrd that didn't survive the plane crash? They're still with us, right? I mean, do you not know their names? Is that why you refer to them that way? Kind of. Kind of breaking the conceit here if you know they died.
Oh, brother.
I'm going to list off some names to you.
Sure.
Paul McCartney, George Harrison. No, dead.
McCartney's still with us.
Oh, sorry, what was him? I meant.
Unless recording this and it gets released, Paul McCartney dies. In which case, I'll feel terrible.
I meant to say John Lennon. Look, listen to this episode 30 years from now. He's bound to be dead by then.
Oh, bro.
Oh, I'm sorry. He'll be 100 years old. Yeah. I apologize, Dan. You know what? For saving Paul McCartney in my world from the fate of being a decrepit old, just shambling thing made of bags of bones, occasionally playing the mandolin.
Yep. By then, he'll have his wings. Angel wings.
Okay.
Anyway.
That was the stupidest joke I made tonight.
I hope
thanks,
my dad
guys.
Doesn't listen to this episode. Paul McCartney's his hero. That's his living will. It just says that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Paul McCartney is technically brain dead. We could keep his body alive on these machines. Let's check his life care plan. Just says live and let die. It's pretty confusing, Paul. Really don't know. So do you want to let us die? Or do you want us to let you die? Or do you want to live? Really? Should have been clear. It says right here, well, I'm not sure if he's saying here this ever-changing world in which we're living or in which we live in. One is redundant mm-hmm. and one is not. You got to be clear with us, Sir Paul. Yep.
And this is just weird where it says, Admiral Halsey notified me. He had to have a drink or half a cup of tea.
Something about a butter pie?
Butter pie? The butter wouldn't melt, so he poured it in the pie.
That's the accident that led to his being in this coma.
I got the lyrics a little bit wrong, but you get the idea.
Hands across the water. Who cares? Yeah. Anyway, so there's a big showdown and a throwdown. Mm-hmm. They manage to bring the monster, who they named Prometheus, to life. And guess what? He's a dumb monster who's just pushing things over. The policeman rushes in, tries to shoot and kill him. The monster doesn't like that.
Choke slam.
Starts choke slamming everybody, kills the inspector. Everybody's dying everywhere. There's explosions.
There's a ton of explosions.
At some point, Mark Gatiss gets exploded. Mark Gatiss, who is in a non-speaking role.
He's a glorified extra.
Yeah.
And Stuart was so excited every time.
I got so excited when he came up.
You're like a major character.
Yeah.
He had a great mustache.
Oh, of course he had a great mustache. He had a great everything, Dan.
It ends up that just being the only people alive, left alive, or the only lovers left alive mm-hmm. are Igor, uh-huh. Dr. Frankenstein, and the monster. And let's just say this. This movie had set a bar for grossness. And they want to make it a big reveal when you see the monster for the first time. And this monster did not cut it.
Yeah, it was super generic.
Like this was the Frankenstein's monster you see in front of the Halloween store. No, not even in front of the Halloween store. They put the good one in front of the Halloween store. Mm-hmm. This is the one you see in the back of the Halloween store where they're like, if anyone gets back here, they're going to see more Halloween stuff. So we'll put this super generic Frankenstein's monster that just kind of has a flattish head and it's kind of like got bolts and stuff.
And you go to see it and there's a guy waiting by there and like, I know it's not very scary, but think about it. He's got two hearts.
Yeah, that's right. They also made him with
four lungs.
They made him with two hearts and four lungs. Two of hearts.
Which
four
I thought
of lungs.
Stuart and Elliot were talking about comics, so they missed it. But I thought there was a pretty funny moment where, like,
we weren't just talking about comics; we're talking about Prophet, which is a great comic.
A great comic.
They thought that the Frankenstein's monster was dead, and Victor Frankenstein was like, Igor, two hearts, and he has to stab him in the second heart.
That's a pretty good moment.
Pretty good joke.
Wow, I didn't realize that Mark Gatiss's character has a name.
What is it? Grimsby?
Sure, it's called Awesome Mustache,
it's Detweiler.
Oh, wow.
But,
everyone ends relatively happily.
It ends up being a big fight between Dr. Frankenstein, Igor, and the monster. And that is a good joke that they, like, stab it through the heart, but then it's got another heart, so it's still living. Mm-hmm. But it's another one where suddenly they have superhuman Superman fighting skills. And it's like, oh, so this monster's not really that scary if two dudes, one of whom only learned to walk normally a few months ago, can just defeat it.
But his knowledge of the human or monster anatomy is so good that that thing's just screwed. He's four or five moves ahead.
Yeah. It's a master chess. Mm-hmm. And so they survive. The girl shows up in the middle of the wreckage the next morning, takes Igor away, and has a note that Dr. Frankenstein wrote him, where Dr. Frankenstein says, you'll always be my greatest creation, Igor. Well, friends, you know what? We should part for a little
BFFs.
While. But I may need your help again sometime in the future. Until then, I remain. And then the title Victor Frankenstein comes up. Ow! Bump, 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 bump. Slide on sunglasses. CSI Miami.
I do love that he's like, I may need your help in the future. And it cuts to him looking at a crude drawing of a head with the top cut off. And it says brain with like an arrow.
There's an arrow pointing at a brain. It says brain. Like he was like, right, that's what I forgot. Brain goes in the head. I put it in the butt. That's why it was so dumb. There is a moment where he sees the monster for the first time. And he's like, I did it, brother. I brought you back. And he sees no spark of intelligence in this being. And he's like, no, this isn't life. And it was one of those things where it was like, what did you think you were making, dude? Like, like he was going to start drinking tea and talking. Like at the very least, he is a baby with the body of a giant. You know,
yeah,
that's best case scenario. You're going to have to teach him how to talk.
Yeah, like Dauber from Coach.
Yeah, perfect analogy.
It's pretty rough, but
we're running super long again.
So final judgments.
Let's do final judgments. Is this a good, bad movie? Wait, hold on. Is this totally scarifying?
Thank you.
Is it totally snorifying? Or is it frighteningly funny? Stuart, what do you have to say?
Worst categories, they never
So there's a chance that this movie was going to be frighteningly funny, but it ended up being snorifying. The first like half an hour is all right, and then it just kind of falls apart and gets really boring. I don't say this a lot, but the fact that there's only one woman with a speaking role just seemed weirdly more pronounced in this specific movie. I don't know why.
She barely had any personality.
Yeah, it was just so... It was
was pretty, Dan. That was the personality.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know... I don't know what could have saved this movie, but not a great movie.
Might as well just not have a female character in it.
Kinda, yeah. I mean...
It was like by including one, it highlighted how unnecessary and just token she was.
Yeah.
Like Glengarry Glen Ross's shit. Just make it a bunch of angry guys yelling at each other in a high pressure situation. Get Al Pacino, Kevin Spacey, Ed Harris, the late Jack Lemmon.
And it feels
Alan
like
Alan
Arkin, Jonathan Pryce. I was like Jeffrey Pryce, that's not his name. Alec Baldwin for a scene written just for the movie, not in the original play, Glengarry Glen Frankenstein.
I think Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Nope. Gonna say negatory to that one.
There's that
Jack
one scene
Black
where he
in
just,
a
like,
non-speaking role.
Ducked his head in and he winked.
Yeah.
He said, gotta go.
Yeah. Gotta go be a kid right now.
It feels like she was included, and a couple of the characters seem like they're included exclusively to force very brief discussions of like the metaphysical and ethical ramifications of trying to bring a dead body back to life.
Yeah.
In conversations that felt pretty out of place for like, oh, you're an acrobat. You know a lot about like, you know a lot about morals and stuff.
I mean, don't limit her.
Okay, I guess you're right.
But I would say this was a movie, not to go by our dumb Shocktober rating
what
system.
What dumb? Sir. Sir.
I apologize.
Sir.
Not to go for our shitty Shocktober ratings.
Okay.
This was for the first like 30, 40 minutes. I was like, this is going to be a movie I kind of like. It's not great. But I'm enjoying this as kind of like a crazy, gross spin on the Frankenstein story. And then it just became snorifying. Like, around the time that – when that zombie chimp died, the movie's spirit died with it.
You know, I have enough goodwill from the first hour of this movie, the zombie chimp hour of this movie, to give it a marginally totally scarifying.
It's not scary.
No, it's not scary.
Scarifying just means quality is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean –
it was just certainly better than I, Frankenstein, which was a piece of garbage.
Well, even when it gets boring, it's still kind of fun because the actors are so good and like their stuff. Like we didn't even get into the fact that the Moriarty character basically just dies by getting like slammed into a big like electrode where he swings into where the Frankenstein monster had been
like throws
suspended
him at it, right?
From the ceiling. Yeah, and he gets lightning-ified.
At that point, you're like, hooray, he can be with his wife.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a happy ending for him.
This is a movie where the main three characters all have like a dark backstory. And they have to bring it up. Like,
it's
the police detective has a dead wife, Frankenstein has a dead brother.
I wish there was less backstory. Just have the characters do what they're doing. We don't need to know it all. But I wish there's like that stretch between Zombie Chimp and the Gotterdammerung at the end where they everything goes to balls. Like that long stretch really kills it, but then it picks up energy at the end.
Yeah.
If that Frankenstein monster had a more interesting design, then the ending might have saved it for me. Because if it was like some lumbering, disgusting thing, I would have been like, oh, this movie's back. You know, they brought it back from the dead with lightning and gross stuff.
And then Igor pulls out a whip and he basically becomes Simon Belmont from the Castlevania series and he like slashes open his guts and then a second baby Frankenstein comes out of the guts.
And it's like, now it's three men and a baby. And they got to
feed
it.
What are we going
to
do with this
thing? Put lightning in a bottle and then give it to him.
Thank you.
me not.
I'm Jesse.
I'm Jordan.
And we've been doing Jordan Jesse Go for almost 10 years now.
And it's not gotten any easier to describe.
So we asked our fans to do it for us.
Jordan Jesse Go is a weekly conversation with
two best pals,
two hilarious friends,
the hilarious smart kids,
talking about hilarious stuff that happens to them,
mostly really stupid stuff,
awkward anecdotes, insane tangents, heartfelt stuff.
It's like being thrown in the middle of a hilarious conversation between you and your best pal.
It's a show that makes me laugh every week, which is pretty rare and wonderful.
Might be the best thing on the internet.
One of the funniest things you will hear.
And it's the best part of my week.
And has kept me company for the past 7 years through all sorts of life. I love those guys.
That's Jordan Jesse Go, the comedy podcast that's been named Best of iTunes.
Every Monday on MaximumFun.org or your favorite podcasting software.
I'll hug you and kiss you and love you.
Love you.
Love you. Love you.
But we got to move on.
Do we have to?
And by moving on, I mean we have...
Slowly unfolding a piece of paper.
A couple of...
Slower.
Of advertisers.
Maybe unfold them before the show. Really unfolding those papers still.
Well, now you're just...
Taking my time. Were you keeping them a secret from us? Is that why they were folded
right.
up?
It's a Shocktober surprise. And the surprise is that the Flophouse is supported in part by Mack Weldon.
Ooh.
What?
I'm wearing a Mack Weldon undershirt right now. I had a big meeting today, and I wanted to feel my best.
That's so why you look really? So confident.
Mm-hmm, thank you. So I wore my Mack Weldon undershirt. And I didn't feel anywhere near as sweaty and gross as I do in my other undershirts.
I've got my Mack Weldon underwear on. My Malk.
That's why
Mack
you look Weldon. So super confident too, Dan.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Look, guys. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. And it's certainly very simple.
Scanning.
Mm-hmm. Too.
It was just the, you really launched into that ad copy strong and then kind of pulled a Barack Obama.
Acquiring.
Buffering. Mack Weldon believes in smart design and easy shopping. Buffering.
I was trying to remember my Mack Weldon shopping experience. That was what the buffering was. But the thing is, the fact that I can't remember it, suggest that it was
super
very
simple
easy.
You put a bunch of underwear in your cart, mm-hmm. you pay for it, you get it and you wear it, and you're like, this is super comfortable. I feel a lot less sweaty and gross.
Yeah.
And I can wear it all day, even longer than normal underwear. I may not take it off ever.
Treat yourself.
They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it and they will refund you, no question asked. And you keep that underwear because, no one wants used underwear. You don't want to send that stuff back.
Yeah.
Vending machines full of it in Japan.
That's true.
Or so the legend goes.
Mack Weldon's underwear.
Legend of Moby Dick.
Socks and shirts are good for all sorts of things. Working out, going to work, going on dates, just everyday life.
They look good. Ladies like the way that men look in them.
Mm-hmm.
Men like the way men look in them.
Men like the way they look. I mean, my only experience is with ladies, so I'm sure men like them too. Pretty early on, I knew what I was into.
All right.
There's no judgment there. It's just like, hey, certain types of music I don't like either. Go ahead and listen to it. I don't care, but it's just not my thing.
Just checking out.
Although I listen to a lot of reggae.
He's looking for a chink in that armor.
I listen to a lot of reggae.
I'm looking for a chance.
My son really likes Bob Marley, so we end up listening to a lot of Bob Marley in the house. Now I'm developing a taste for it I never had before. Maybe if my son is gay, I'll start being into dudes. I don't know.
Yeah, you want to have something to talk about around the old fire.
I mean, that's one of the great things about having children is that their interests open up new worlds for you.
Yeah.
Maybe that involves man on man. I don't know.
Yeah, and the moral of all this is
Mack Weldon. Buy
Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using the promo code FLOP.
Get ready to wear the best underwear you've ever worn.
You want to talk to us about Casper mattresses?
I would love to. Now, we're also supported in part by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses, for a fraction of the price that you'd pay in the store for a non-premium mattress. It's obsessively engineered. They have obsessed over the engineering, much like Dr. Frankenstein, obsessed over bringing life back from the dead. Except instead of tampering in God's domain, they're tampering in your bedroom's domain. And I think you're going to like the tampering that they did. It's a shockingly fair price. Now, Dan, you have more personal experience with Casper mattresses than I do.
I do have a Casper mattress. It's a delight for sleeping on and Sleeping
and
on.
Dot, dot, dot.
Yep.
Tell and us less.
Sleeping on.
Yeah.
Whether you're sleeping out of tiredness or sleeping out of depression, mm-hmm. Casper mattresses.
Both of those things are I have experience with.
Now, there's a risk-free trial and return policy. Try sleeping on it for 100 days. Use your Casper mattress for 100 days. That's slightly more than 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If you don't like it, it's free delivery and painless returns. The mattresses are made in America by Americans, so you know it's both high quality and patriotic. And it's $500 for a twin-size mattress, $950 for a king-size mattress. That is a lot less than I paid for my current mattress, which makes me mad that I didn't wait for Casper to exist, because when I bought my mattress, Casper didn't exist yet.
Yeah.
And they send it to you in a box, and it pops out when you open up the box, mm-hmm. right?
And you'll like sleep like the dead.
Like Erica Laniak and Under Siege. It pops right out.
yep.
Again, I don't really this is a certain like sexist bent to your references these days.
No, it's not. It's just a reference. It's not.
I mean, it is the most paused part of Under Siege.
It's right.
Part of video rentals. Now, Flophouse listeners get a special offer. That's $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/flop and using the promo code FLOP when you check out. Now, again, that's www.casper.com/flop. Use the promo code FLOP. That's $50 off of your mattress. It's already a low price. Now it's going to be even lower. Try it for 100 days. You don't like it, send it back. Terms and conditions apply. I don't know what that means. You'll have to do the work on that one, fair listeners.
But now that all the business is taken care of,
Ooh. We
can get on to letters from listeners. Listeners like you? Question mark? Maybe.
Listeners
could you
like
send
who?
A letter? If you did... This could be your letter.
Letters from listeners on Shocktober. La 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 la. Danny Elfman style music. Shocktober letters.
Nice. So this is from first name withheld, last name withheld.
Okay, so nobody sent this.
Who writes, "Hello, I'm a pretty recent listener, but I love your show and have been burning through your back catalog at about 2 episodes a day."
That's a lot.
"I was so excited when I saw you guys had finally broken down and reviewed Nothing But Trouble with the great John Hodgman, no less. I have a bit of a weird perspective on that movie. I had never seen it until a few years back when my girlfriend excitedly picked up a DVD copy out of a department store clearance bin and insisted we watch it that night. Come to find out, this film is a favorite of her family. Just as some families get together and watch It's a Wonderful Life or A Christmas Story, the last name withhelds gather around the TV in delight and Nothing But Trouble, laughing heartily to each other and quoting their favorite lines later at the dinner table. It's quite a thing to experience."
Their miniature train-bedecked dinner table where they eat huge franks.
You know what? When I read this email for the first time, I imagined the same thing.
Mm-hmm. We live the Nothing But Trouble lifestyle. I hope you'll be a part of it.
"It's quite a thing to experience being the only one in a room full of people who doesn't think Nothing But Trouble is a cinema classic."
So he's dating Dan Aykroyd's daughter, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he says, "From this upbringing, you might be imagining my girlfriend turning out to be a dangerous lunatic. But oddly enough, she and her whole family are otherwise quite pleasant and normal."
I'm trying to imagine what lines from that movie they're quoting. I mean, it's basically just what those two little crazy baby characters are talking about, right?
Yeah, Bad Boy and Toonsbo or whatever their names are.
Little Devil.
Little Devil and Beelzebaby.
Yeah, I would normally advise you to break up with this person immediately, but...
No, study this person.
No, yeah.
You've got a front row
close.
One-way ticket to the rarest of all breeds, a clan of nothing but troublers in the wild. So, yeah, find out what they like about it so much.
Yeah, report back. Observe them. Mm-hmm. Take notes.
Be wary. Because when you study monsters, be worried that you may become one. I think Dylan Thomas said that.
No. So many errors.
"Dear Dan, Salacious Stew and Exuberant Elliot." I don't get a nickname.
Apparently. Well, Dear Dan.
Yep.
Dear
Salacious
Dan.
Stew is
Dear
that guy
Dan.
Who sits on Jabba's
right,
tail.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
This past
apparently
weekend.
Apparently Stan Lee wrote us this letter.
This past weekend, I went to see Scarface with the flop cult I've assembled here in New Zealand, based on your teachings. Although I'd obviously seen clips of the movie before, I'd never watched the whole thing.
Now, which, from context, can you tell which Scarface is this? Is this the original Howard Hawks, or is this the later one?
From context, I believe it's the later one.
I'm assuming.
Based on...
I can't, as a philosopher, I assume nothing.
Although I'd obviously seen clips of the movie before, I'd never watched the whole thing in its entirety. And what amazed me most about it was how many hundreds of references to and parodies of Scarface I've seen in my life.
Oh, okay, so it's a later one. Without Nobody parodies the first one.
Yeah. Exactly what they're from. Do you think Scarface is the most referenced or parodied movie of all time? What would be the other contenders? What movie have you watched that made you go, oh, so that's what that is? Hope you're all well. Dre, last name with L.
I would put Wizard of Oz and...
Citizen Kane is pretty up there.
I would put Wizard of Oz and The Godfather as the two I can think mm-hmm. of that I feel like I've seen parodied the most. The Godfather was definitely one of those ones where as a kid, I saw references to it, like the horse head in the bed, I knew about long before I ever saw the movie because there were jokes for it everywhere. And like a lot of the lines in it and things. Like Marlon Brando's performance, it actually took me a long time to not think of as a joke because mm-hmm. I had seen parodies of it and other things.
Yeah. Those are good ones. I mean...
And probably like Smurfs too, or like that Alvin the Chipmunks Road Chip movie. That's been parodied a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
I saw... I saw
it's part of our culture, you know?
Yeah.
It's part of the landscape.
It's part of the shared heritage. Uh-huh. Yeah.
The oral tradition. I saw the Bobo episode of The Simpsons before I saw Citizen Kane. And so it was a much richer experience once I knew... The whole episode was pretty much a
Citizen straight Kane
parody of Citizen Kane. Although Citizen Kane doesn't end with a robotic Citizen Kane in the future, a monkey future, taking his sled.
Maybe it would have been a success if it had.
Yeah.
Now, I remember it took me a long time to realize that Silence of the Hams was a parody of Silence of the Lambs.
You thought it was just a great Dom DeLuise vehicle.
Yeah. I was like, Dom's done it again.
Dom DeLuise, more like Dom DeLaughs.
Now, on the other hand, you've got a movie like Airplane, which at this point has completely surpassed the movies that it was parodying mm-hmm. in terms of cultural relevance and people remembering it. And now you see like references to Airplane, whereas Airplane was very closely parodying
what's Zero Hour.
Zero Hour, yeah. And like the idea of the airport movies.
Do you think the Scary Movie guys were really kind of shooting for that with their trilogy?
Maybe. I mean, I would if they had been like, you know what? If someday people are going to think Scream was a ripoff of Us.
Mm-hmm.
Like they might have thought that.
Our movie that features a guy getting impaled through the head with a penis through the ear.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the way you described it sounds really good.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
If Takashi Miike directed it, we'd be like, that's great. We've got to go see it.
What an auteur.
This one is from Adam, last name withheld, who writes, hey, Elliot / Stuart / Dan.
Adam the First Man, also known as Frankenstein's Monster.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what is God but the original Dr. Frankenstein?
Elliot, Stuart, Dan.
Can we really say that the real man that God created has done that much better than Frankenstein's monster?
No, just an idiot raging at an unforgiving chaos.
We're just violent idiots shambling around punching stuff for no reason.
Yeah.
Hey, Elliot, Stuart, Dan, in order of what I assume is your interest in kaiju films.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyways, I have a couple of questions for you. Number one, I'm a big
Godzilla. What's a kaiju film?
Number one, I'm a big Godzilla fan. And having recently re-listened to your old episodes.
Now, do you mean you're a big fan of Godzilla or you're a fan of when Godzilla's big and not that Marvel comic storyline where he shrunk down?
Or you're a fan who is big. Who mm-hmm. enjoys Godzilla.
Yeah, like you're a little boy who casts a spell on yourself and you're going to fuck some old lady.
Yeah.
old lady?
I mean, I guess
she's
she
probably
was
like 32.
Okay, chill out. I'm who's saying old now? In comparison because
well,
he
ages.
Was a fucking little boy, man.
A little boy, man.
Exactly. He yeah. was an apt descriptor.
What's the name of the machine? They found. It's not Zardoz. I keep wanting to say Zardoz.
I was about to say Jambi, but I think that's wrong.
Zoltan.
Zoltan. That's what it is.
So the ambiguous sentence again. I'm a big Godzilla fan.
Okay.
And having
table that one.
Recently re-listened to your old episodes, I have heard Elliot make quite a few references to the old Godzilla movies, like specifically the almost incomprehensible moral message of Godzilla 2000 being that. There's a little bit of Godzilla in all of us.
Oh, beautiful. As he's destroying the city.
They look happily on.
It's wonderful.
It's a great
ending.
I mean,
he has just defeated an alien invader using fighting, but still.
The guy and the kid, like, looking on.
And then he goes, why is Godzilla always saving us as he's burning down a city?
That's his right. His right after killing the giant alien.
He's the protector and shepherd of this earth.
Now I have to ask all three of you, which is your favorite Godzilla movie? The original 1954 Gojira, 1956 Godzilla King of the Monsters is off the table because everyone loves that one. Number two question, the Adventure Zone crossover is one of my favorite episodes that you guys have done. Now, I know your levels of experience with D&D are different between the three of you. Stuart reigns supreme here. But what are your favorite classes to play? I look forward to hearing your responses and whatever humorous tangents they lead to. Well, don't put too much pressure
Come
on us.
Come on, dude. You can't ask for it. Now it's not going to happen.
Adam, mm-hmm. last name with hell.
It's like going into a date and you're like, I'm looking forward to the sex we'll have tonight. It's mm-hmm. like, well, you just made it not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And if it does happen, it's going to be mechanical and workmanlike.
Yeah, because you're going out with a robot, dude. Mm-hmm.
Because I consider this sex that I'm giving you, sir, as payment for the Olive Garden you put in my belly.
Wow.
I'm pretty mercenary when it comes to dating, Dan.
When it comes to Olive Garden. Hey, you're here, your family, and when I'm here, it's just to get some sweet breadsticks before we bone down.
It's a carbo load before I bone down.
When you're here, you're a prostitute.
Yeah,
my favorite Godzilla movies, I'll just get right off the bat, of the modern era, Godzilla Final Wars is super fun. There's a little bit too much fighting between humans and humanoid aliens, where it's just Matrix-style martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that is good, goes a little too far, and I like that the morality of that movie is also weird, and then it seems to end with Godzilla and Minya forgiving America for dropping the atomic bomb on Japan. Not something they really have the right to do. But when I was a kid, for some reason, I really loved Terror of Mechagodzilla, which has Godzilla, Mechagodzilla, and Titanosaurus.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's not particularly good, but for some reason I really liked it a lot as a kid.
I don't really have a wide experience, so I saw Godzilla 2000 in the theaters and I had a ball, so I'm gonna go with that because I don't have, like, as I said, a big frame of reference. Although non-Godzilla kaiju, I enjoy watching Mystery Science Theater episodes with Gamera.
Like Gamera, yeah. There's this new Godzilla movie that's coming out that looks like it could be really good.
Yeah.
But what are you going to say, Stu?
I'm going to pick a non-Godzilla kaiju movie. I was a sucker for Mothra for some reason growing up. I don't know if it was those little girls that are singing the Mothra song.
I'd still call that a Godzilla movie. It's in the Godzilla-verse.
But what I would also like to recommend is if you like kaiju and you like comics, run, don't walk to your local comic shop and pick up the comic book Kaiju Max by Xander Cannon. I'm a huge fan. It's a story about kaiju in a world where kaiju are kept on a prison island. So it manages to be very cartoony and colorful, but also a very dark prison drama featuring
harrowing prison story.
And the writing manages to fit a lot of fun jokes and references to kaiju movies and monsters and stuff like that.
And Xander Cannon's a great artist.
Oh, and he's great. So if you get a chance, go check that out. And it's pretty, well, I think the first trade's only $10, so.
Mm-hmm.
But the second question was, what are favorite classes to play in D&D? And I don't know that Elliot and I have much to say about
D&D
this.
To me, D&D is dinosaurs and diners. That's what I grew up with. So, Stu, you take this one.
So Elliot's obviously loves playing bards. He loves having excuse to talk and sing. That's pretty obvious.
If I didn't play a druid, I think I would want to play a rogue.
That seems appealing to me.
Maybe your druid could become a rogue.
He became a bit of a rogue in a upcoming episode that we won't talk about because we're just teasing it now.
Mm-hmm.
But his personality underwent a radical shift.
Very abrupt shift halfway through the adventure.
Perhaps he's finding that mystery that he's searching for, that dark mystery of the universe. I would say I really like playing paladins because I like playing I have a tendency to like playing really strong, really charismatic dudes that might be a little bit dumb.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's adorable. Last letter of the evening from Patrick Henry, last name withheld. Hey, floppos. I recently was flooded with terrible memories of times I showed girls movies I thought would make me seem interesting. like when I was a freshman in high school and tried to impress.
I was a freshman.
You know what?
I was going to let it go that he said freshman weird, but you know what? On it.
You know what?
Call me Prometheus.
You know what?
Someday I'll be a sophomore.
I'll tell you something. I overpronounced it because this person wrote, like when I was a freshman in high school. So I was correcting a mistake in
like
the letter.
M-I-N?
M-E-N.
Yeah, like middle of the fucking freshman. Mississippi, dude.
Like multiple men.
Okay. Oh, like multiple men. Jamie Madrox.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was doing him a favor, but you called me out on it.
I didn't. Stuart did. Don't look at me, sir. Take your accusing eyes and turn them to other way.
Perhaps I'm simply an agent of Elliot.
Who's really in charge of Stu? Stu or me? Yeah.
Like when I was a freshman in high school. And I tried to impress a British girl by showing her Guy Ritchie's Snatch.
Just going to let impress go?
Yeah. Or later, when I thought I would seem edgy by making a prospective mate sit through Darren Aronofsky's Pi because Requiem for a Dream was too mainstream. Needless to say, these attempts were fruitless. Do you guys have any memories of times you tried to show someone you were romantically interested in a movie and in retrospect it was a poor choice? Patrick Henry, last name withheld. P.S. The first movie me and my now partner for 6 years watched together was The Big Lebowski while my brother was passed out on the couch. So it all works out in the end.
Okay. I mean, like, I certainly like remember in high school showing a girl that I liked.
So wait, are we going to lay some ground rules and say this isn't a opportunity for us to just brag about all the times we totally hooked up with chicks watching movies?
We're only talking about times we didn't hook up with chicks.
Okay.
That like when I was in high school, I showed a girl Brazil. Because I was like, this movie's amazing. And she thought it was really weird. And I remember two times now, I've taken women to see 2001 A Space Odyssey and have them, one, fall asleep during it. And the other time, my then-girlfriend, now-wife, we went to see the movie The Fall, which
your favorite
movie. Tarsim movie, which is one of my favorite movies. And then I was like, 2001's playing at midnight, same theater, let's go to that. And the whole time she's like, why? Why are we sitting through this movie? Yeah. It's so late and I'm so tired.
Sarah and I, our taste in movie was very close together. But I do remember one time when I was describing the plot of Audition to her. And I was like making a point about, I was like explaining how this movie about torture was actually a movie about like feminism.
Why did you ruin that movie for somebody? Let them go into it fresh, dog.
So she'll hate you for real.
Yes. Why don't you watch it and then right at about the middle point, you turn and just focus on watching the reactions.
Put a camera on her.
She almost immediately.
Two girls, one cup this.
She almost immediately was like, I'm not interested in hearing about this. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in this movie. I don't care.
No,
this
but then she keeps saying deeper and you're like, what?
Yeah.
The other night I was just, for some reason, Audition came up in conversation and I told Danielle was that, oh yeah. And halfway through, it turns out she's a crazy person. I won't tell you what happens at the end. And she said, thank you.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing is when you're explaining something that you know the other person isn't interested in and you have that moment of realization. I was like, I think I was describing the plot of a Rick and Morty episode to my wife. And I'm like, I should probably stop doing this. But I need to have some kind of like, I need to like wrap it up somehow. I need to give her a beginning, middle, and end of this story.
Because the lack of closure will be even worse than the time I'm taking from her life.
Which episode?
I think it was the Mr. Poopy Butthole episode.
Okay, sure.
Which was a great episode.
There was a time at my old job when I was a production assistant where I somehow found myself going into a monologue with a couple of my coworkers about the greats of stop motion animation. And while I'm talking about how like Willis O'Brien taught, you know, mentored Ray Harryhausen, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, why are you talking about this? They don't give a shit. Look at their faces. This is a waste of their time that I like couldn't pull out of the dive. It's just like, no, I have to see this through. I'm going to tell them about Phil Tippett and then I'll just stop there.
To actually answer the question, I know at least two different women have fallen asleep while I showed them Conan the Barbarian. I, of course, stayed up for the entire movie.
I assume you weren't trying to impress them with Conan and the Barbarian. You just like Conan the Barbarian.
I think it's an awesome, I mean, I don't know. I don't want, I mean, I don't show women movies to impress them.
I mean, it's not with this. I don't know if necessarily trying to impress them, but like you're
no,
like,
but I want to show
is cool.
I want to share something that I love and yeah. I think it's cool, and I obviously could expound at length about why it's cool, but I never had the opportunity because they'd fall asleep.
I've told the story on here. I think this is not the same thing, but when I showed my wife The Iron Giant when we were first going out. And I warned her ahead of time, like, I'm going to cry at this movie. And she was like, that's fine. That's okay. And then afterwards, she was like, I didn't think you were going to cry that much. Like that, I thought you were going to, like, tear up, but your face is all wet. Still does it to me. I just think about that movie and it makes me cry.
Yeah, it's like when I watch the end credits of Return of the King. I'm like, Charlene, get out of the room. Just don't look at me ever again.
It can't be over.
I'm going to be a mess.
It can't be over. Take The Hobbit, which has almost no plot, and turn it into three movies,
when they
please.
Start doing the credits and they show like the like sketches of the different... Oh, my God, I lose it every time. Oh, fuck.
So what do we do now, Dan? The letters are done. Gone the sun. Oh, yeah. From the hills, from the whatever.
Mm-hmm. This is
off to the gray havens, along with I think Bilbo.
Yeah, this is the point in the Flophouse where we recommend movies that we actually like, movies that might be a better way to spend your time than watching Victor Frankenstein. Although
that almost
again,
rhymed.
I kind of liked it, but let's go, Stuart.
Good turn.
Sure.
As Dan saw that I was yawning and was looking at me waiting for me to finish to answer, he then decided, you know what, I'll go to Stuart.
You know what, it's not worth it. This guy can finish his involuntary
You guys going to vamp some more before I go?
No, or Stuart, go ahead, your turn.
So, at least this movie is something that I'm surprised that I haven't recommended, but I'm going to trust in the Flophouse Recommends wiki, which is great, that shows that it hasn't been recommended. I'm going to recommend a Shocktober movie called The Howling, directed by Joe Dante. Hmm. This kind of a horror classic about a couple. It's a reporter who goes through a traumatic experience, and she and her husband, as a means to kind of repair her like emotional state and get her ready to go back to work, they go to a retreat up in the woods. And the people in the town and at the retreat slowly turn out to be more than what they seem. And it's definitely a very like kind of 70s kind of gritty, little bit trashy movie. It's got some it's called The Howling, so you know it's a fucking werewolf movie, so no spoilers there, but it's got some really great practical werewolf effects. It's got a great sense of humor. It's a little bit sexy, so you know, hey, date night's coming up. So check it out, The Howling. Oh, and a little bit of an update for those following this podcast, The Flophouse. I now watched a little bit more of Hard Target 2, including I just watched a scene where Scott Adkins riding a motorcycle shoots a net and then a missile at Rona Mitra while she pulls out two crossbow pistols and shoots crossbow darts at him. I'm not going to tell you how that scene ends.
But are you still enjoying the movie?
Yeah. I'm totally enjoying it. I got to dole it out in small portions.
The
otherwise,
saga of Stuart watching Hard Target 2.
It's like I'm edging myself a little bit. I don't want to give myself completely over to the pleasure.
Sure. Dan, what are you going to recommend?
I wish I had a Shocktober movie. I should have thought about this beforehand. I should have thought about this beforehand in a couple of different ways. I should have had a movie to recommend.
You want me to recommend? I don't have a horror movie, but you want me to recommend a movie while you're doing that?
No, the most recent movie that I watched that I enjoyed, and this is, as so often, a qualified recommendation from me, is a movie called... Mr.
Nice Guy. Possibly featuring Jackie Chan. Possibly featuring one Jackson Chan.
Mr. Right. This is the movie that I thought of last week when I was thinking of Mr. Nice Guy.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt, Dan, but I kind of have to. Is Jackie Chan in this movie?
Jackie Chan is not in this movie.
Okay, good. At least we had a... Took you a little bit of time to get there, but at least we have a real answer. Concrete idea of whether what the Jackie Chan quotient or JCQ is of this film.
Now, you know me. I'm a little easier on movies than I think either of you are. So take this with a grain of salt. But if you're looking for a very, very light movie to watch if you're, I don't know, lazing around on the couch... need a pick me up. Yeah. Mr. Right is a good one.
On a Sunday afternoon.
It stars Anna Kendrick and Sam Rockwell, two people who are professionally good at being charming. And that's what they do in the movie. Stuart is putting his hand over his face. I don't know what it is about what I just
said.
I'm
realizing what movie it is. And the moment you when so you much. Thought about that movie and were like, is Jackie Chan in that movie?
I didn't think it's Jackie Chan in that movie. I just got the title of it wrong.
Maybe he was like a side character.
I got the title of it wrong.
Maybe he had a cameo?
And
okay, sorry. No, they're great. I like Sam Rockwell and Anna Kendrick.
They're both really fun.
Do they dance and or sing?
Sam Rockwell does a bunch of dancing.
Because he's Sam Rockwell.
Because that's what he loves to do, and he's good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the main problem with the movie is it's one of these movies about a charming hitman. And as Elliot...
Ooh.
Yeah, Elliot is against that. And I'm
not a fan. Again, if there had never been a movie about a charming hitman or a hitman with real problems, I'd be like, oh, that's an interesting twist. But there's been so many of them.
What about... Is it Tommy Flanagan? What's the name of Hitman from DC's comics?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about him? Do you like that guy?
I mean, the thing about him is that his character is treated as someone who is morally compromised in a way that you haven't seen in, like, a superhero comic necessarily. Okay. So because it's a different medium.
What about Taskmaster? Is he a hitman?
Taskmaster is a trainer of other mercenaries and sometimes a mercenary himself. But he's
also a skeleton.
No, he just wears a mask.
Okay.
His original roots were he's the guy who trains thugs.
And he wears, like, buccaneer boots.
He doesn't anymore, again, but I like the old-fashioned one. Cape, buccaneer boots, skull mask, and he's got, like, a bow and arrow and a sword and everything. And a shield.
Yeah.
But when Hitman the comic came out, we were not quite so overwhelmed with Hitman stuff.
Okay.
We were on our way. Not quite there.
Let me just say, though, that if you remove the hitman stuff from the equation, which you can't because it's a major part of the movie, but
if it's the plot.
If this was just a movie about a scatterbrained woman falling in love with a really weird dude, it would be a lot of fun because those two, as I said, are charming as hell, and they do a really good job being charming together. And but the hitman plot does allow Tim Roth to have a role in the movie, and he's always fun to see.
Oh, United Passion.
So it's a movie that didn't get very good reviews, and I understand why. But it's got its own like offbeat charm that I responded to.
All right, mine is also kind of qualified recommendation. In fact, I'd almost like to make an assignment out of it for our more intrepid listeners. There is no deadline for this, and maybe there's a prize someday, but. Take your time with it. I'd like to recommend a movie that the first hour or so of it, first half of it, roughly, maybe 45 minutes, I was like, this movie is great. Why have I never watched it before? And then the second half, I was like, this movie doesn't know what the fuck it's doing. And that movie is The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean, starring Paul Newman, directed by John Huston, written by John Milius. And the
beginning of Conan the Barbarian.
Of Conan the Barbarian fame. And the first, like I'm saying, first half of the movie is great. And like both like funny but also troubling. And there's an action scene where Paul Newman as Judge Roy Bean, he's been attacked and left for dead by some people. He goes to their like hideout shack in the middle of this, you know, village in the middle of nowhere and murders all of them. But he's like running through the shack and then running around it, jumping in through another window, running back. And the way it's shot is so immediate and so visceral. It's something that it's really exciting to see John Huston, who's a director from the Golden Age, you know, who didn't grow up with that kind of thing, doing more like handheld movement and things like that. It's really exciting. And there's Anthony Perkins has a really fun role for a couple scenes in it. And it's I can pinpoint the moment the movie goes bad. And it's the moment when John Huston shows up as Grizzly Adams and gives a lovable drunk bear to Judge Roy Bean as a pet. And Judge Roy Bean decides he's going to fall in love and it becomes not interesting. And then from that point on, it's jumping around into the future and stuff like the movie kind of doesn't know what to do after a certain point. And so my assignment to you, the listener, if you want to take it up, if you don't, that's fine too. Watch The Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean. Stop it at the moment Grizzly Adams shows up with his cart with a bear at it, or watch the rest of the movie. But I would say stop at that point and then just say, like, that was a good, very short movie. Or tell me what should have happened from that point on in the film to make it a more satisfying film, because I honestly don't know. I've been trying to figure it out, and I can't figure it out. So send in your answers to the Flophouse whenever you want.
And send in the clowns.
And send in the clowns.
Mm-hmm.
Those Laffy Daffy clowns. send in those soulful and doleful schmaltz by the bowlful clowns. That's the Simpsons version of it. And because it's Shocktober, why should I? I've been talking about how much I wish Victor Frankenstein was directed by Stuart Gordon. Why not just go watch the next best thing, and that's Reanimator?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure you've seen it. Watch it again; it's great.
This movie hits all of the story beats of Reanimator in a less good way.
Yeah. And so, Life and Times of Judge Roy Bean, if you want a challenge. But Reanimator, if you just want to sit there and watch a really great, fun, gross horror movie that has one of the best jump cuts in film history. It's right up there, I think, with the ape man throwing a bone in the air and it turns into a space station in 2001, which is when what's-his-name is with his girlfriend teasing her, and she's going, no, no, no. And then it cuts to them having sex, and she goes, yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. It's such a ridiculous cut. So it's right up there with the smash cut that ends They Live. So
yeah.
What's the matter, baby?
Cut to credits.
And I feel like Reanimator has one of the best horror movie performances from, like, I guess, a villain with Jeffrey Combs as Herbert West. Like, it's a star-making turn.
And very much he's playing what James McAvoy should have been in this movie, which is a character who is kind of the villain, but also kind of the protagonist driver of the plot, in that it's Herbert West's story, even if he's a crazy person who goes off the rails and does bad things, you know?
Yeah, he's a crazy person who has, like, you have to dial back the charm a little bit. I don't know. There's something, because it's not like you are like, oh, I want to spend time with Herbert West.
No, well, he's so complete in himself. He's a character who doesn't care if the audience likes him.
Yeah.
And I really like that a lot. Like, he's the contempt he feels towards everyone else in the movie, he also feels towards the audience.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, yeah, go see Reanimator. It's Halloween times. Spooky. Yeah. Chain rattle.
Spooky, scary.
Boogans.
Werewolf Bar Mitzvah.
This has been the first Shocktober episode. There's two others to come in this Shocktober season.
What?
It's one of those rare three-episode Shocktobers.
It only happens
and turns.
Mm-hmm. Ups and downs.
Who knows how many more scenes from Hard Target 2. Stuart will see as Shocktober wends its way across the River Styx into the afterlife.
What surprises does Shocktober hold? A couple. So, for the Flophouse.
Yeah.
I've been Dan McCoy.
And I've been Stuart Wellington, seated, sultry.
And I'm the dearly departed Elliot Kalin, risen once more by the power of lightning. We should give ourselves spooky parody names like they do in the Halloween episodes of Simpsons.
Yeah, next time.
Next time. All surprises right. For next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Dan, did you ever figure out if that was Jackie Chan in that movie?
Here's the thing that I realized about that, is that it's not like Jackie Chan makes more than one kind of movie. It's not like, oh, yeah, it was one of the like musical romantic comedies that Jackie Chan did. That's why I got it mixed up. No, he only makes one kind of movie.
Yeah.
Martial arts films with a greater or lesser degree of comedy.
He doesn't make locked room thrillers.
It was not like a science fiction epic about a world where dinosaurs have supplanted people. Like, he doesn't make those movies. We call it Planet Chan.
Chan-it.
Jackie Rassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
So first we do the intro, and then we do the show. That's how it works.
Sounds easy to me. Let's fuck it up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.
The great questions of your life.
The great questions of your life.
Should you put ketchup on a hot dog?
Put ketchup on a hot dog.
Toilet paper, over or under?
Toilet paper.
Star Wars,
Star
or Star
Wars
Trek?
Or Star Trek.
Fear not, my friends.
Fear not,
Mark
my
and
friends.
Hal always reach the definitive answer. Simply listen to We Got This with Mark and Hal every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Pacific on Maximum Fun.
Fun.
We got this. Your better self is right around the corner. Namaste.